Hello, Stitchers. Welcome to Stitch Please, the official podcast of Black Women Stitch, the sewing group where Black Lives Matter. I'm your host, Lisa Woolfork. I'm a fourth-generation sewing enthusiast with more than 20 years of sewing experience. I am looking forward to today's conversation, so sit back, relax, and get ready to get your stitch together. Hey, friends. Hey, welcome to the Stitch Please podcast. I am so excited to have you here today. I'm going to be talking about some of the lessons that I have learned from the I'm a Sewist series that I've been doing on social media since toward the end of December 2023. I've done videos in December, in January, and also in this month of February, and it has been a lot of fun. A really quick way to share some quick tips, to share some of the quirks and foibles that happen when you sew, some of the things that sewists and quilters and needleworkers have in common, sometimes some of the funny situations that we get ourselves into as creatives in general. And I will be talking about that with you in just a few minutes, but I wanted to tell you about what I'm working on now. I am working on Know Me pattern number 2063. This is a jumpsuit from Brittany J. Jones. And when I say working on it, I mean I own it. And I have also opened it. And I am about to make labels for every pattern piece so that when I cut them, I can label the fabric. I have also, quote unquote, worked on it by thinking of the fabric I'm going to use. So let me tell you about the fabric it requires. It is a gorgeous jumpsuit, romper and jumpsuit. I think romper is just a word for a short pant leg jumpsuit. That's what I'm learning. The jumpsuit itself asks for woven fabrics, including chambray, cotton blends, and linen blends. And then there's also some lightweight fusible interfacing. And I think I'm going to do the Rashida Coleman Hale rayon that I got last year. And that's what I'll use for this pattern. It is beautiful. It has a nice wide leg that I really like. I'm not a super fan of sashes. I feel like they just don't, I just don't like them. I just feel like sometimes they get sloppy. So what I think I might do is make a kind of a belt, but that it would be a little thicker. And rather than tie it, I think I want to make it so that it snaps. And so this might mean some type of modification where I use some decorative elastic or something. I'm not sure, but you definitely want the waist to be cinched. That's how you hold the garment together in the front. And it also helps to give it its shape. But I don't think I want a sash. So I'm going to maybe give that a try to see what that would look like, to measure a band to match my waist and then maybe to put a little elastic in it so that I have room for ease and movement and stuff. So just wanted to give you a quick update of the pattern that I am working on this week, or the pattern that I am thinking about this week. And you will see social media updates of this once it becomes real. So stay tuned for that. In this episode, I'm going to be sharing a variety of tips that I've divided into three categories. Things that are good for beginners, good for advanced, good for everyone. Then there's tips that I recommend for intermediate sewists. Things that will help make your sewing more efficient, things that might improve your practice overall. And then the third category is advanced. It's advanced because it requires a greater degree of financial commitment. It's about equipment. And yet it is still something that is absolutely worth doing and will save you time and effort in the long run. And so these are the three categories that we'll be talking about today. We've got tips and recommendations for everyone, which also covers beginners. If you're just getting started, it's always good to start with the best practices that you can so that you can build a really good foundation for your sewing. If you're intermediate and you've been doing this for some time, you could always learn that there's other ways to maybe go about it that you might end up liking even better. And if you are intermediate, if you are advanced, then you have a very well cultivated sewing practice, but maybe there's some things you had not considered. And so that's what this episode is for. It's designed to help bring to you some of the practices that I share in the I'm a Sewist series so that you can hear more about them. Let's start with the easiest thing, or something that I think is a basic fundamental thing that is not that difficult to do. And that is using a prescription pill bottle for your sharps. The reason a prescription pill bottle is a good thing to have is because it has the anti-child lock on it. Now, I know sometimes those anti-child locks are also anti-parent locks, but because I know I don't have little children anymore, I can get a regular easy cap removal prescription bottle and put my sharps in it. Why do I like it so much? I like it because it is very sturdy plastic. I like that it can hold the sharps, but also let me see what is inside. I like that there's a way or a use for these medicine bottles when I am done with them. Now, if you are a person that's like, I never take medicine, what on earth am I supposed to do? Well, congratulations for being healthy. What you could do is to connect with somebody who's taken medicine and doesn't sew and will not be using their bottles for anything. So this means something like Facebook Marketplace, or if you have a local Buy Nothing community where you live, you could say, does anybody collect bottles of this size, or does anyone have any extra pill bottles? And there will be people that will have them. The pill bottle, I believe, is a superior way to easily dispose of these needles. It's something that many of us have on hand or have access to. They have the child lock, and that is a great way to keep people safe from your sharps. Another thing I like about the medicine bottle is that it is large. And so I get the type, there's lots of different types of medicine bottles, but the one that I use has a diameter that's about 2 inches across. It's like almost like a 2-inch circle or 2 1/4-inch circle. So they're pretty sizable. Not only have I been able to put pins and needles and staples in there, I've also been able to drop rotary blades in there, which is a very big deal because those can sometimes be very difficult to dispose of. The medicine bottle is great because after, when I get ready to dispose of this, I can lock it down with the child lock. I can tape it and write sharps on the tape, and then you can put it into the regular trash can. I have done some research both with medical professionals as well as with the sanitation overall, and the way that one disposes of sharps in our local trash system is to put them in a really tough container. And the way they kind of describe that kind of container is a laundry bottle. So you can put it in after you've used your laundry detergent or your bleach or whatever. They recommend those types of containers. Other containers that I believe could work, or what I've heard other people use, are spice bottles, because they have the holes up top and you can drop stuff in there and then tape it up and seal it up. Those are glass. I've heard other people take them and stick them in something, like in like a ball or something like that, or wrap them really well and stick them in the trash. You absolutely want to protect yourself from sharps. Myself, Lisa, me personally, I like to get as much trash into a trash can as I can. And so I will press with my hands or my foot, depending on what the trash is, press it down so I can get more in the bag. I think that helps to, you know, not waste so many bags, et cetera, et cetera. There is a danger when you put sharps, unprotected sharps, into a trash can. Even if you are not the type of person who would push down on a trash bag to get more trash in there, there will be someone, some human person, will come into contact with your fabric trash or your sewing trash. One good way to think about disposing of the sharps is to make sure they are secure enough that nothing will poke out, nothing will slice out, and no other person or animal can be injured by them. That is the most important part. So even if you don't use a medicine bottle, don't just toss it in the trash. Don't just stick it in a napkin. Do anything you can to keep that from hurting someone else. And that's the first basic tip. The second tip is more intermediate. This is an intermediate tip because it does require a purchase beyond just having something or upcycling something you already have. And that is get a bodkin. Get a bodkin. You deserve a bodkin, sis. Get a bodkin. A bodkin is going to totally help your sewing. It's going to make things easier. Let me tell you what a bodkin is. So the word bodkin has two distinct definitions. One that's Old English and it means a weapon. It's a small dagger. And this was something that was referred to in Shakespeare's Hamlet. So it's a short knife with a thin blade. This is not a sewing bodkin. That is not a sewing bodkin. Do not get a short dagger slash knife and then call me or text me and say, your advice tore up my whole thing. You know, no, don't use that. The bodkins that I mean is a sewing notion, and it is a tool that's used to grab or hold material, especially things like drawstrings or elastic. And it works in the same way that we use like needles to go through fabric. You know how when you pierce if you're hand sewing and you pierce the needle with thread, and then as you pull the thread will follow the eye of the needle, right? That is how a bodkin works too. But instead of threading thread through the eye of the needle, you can thread your material, either your elastic or your drawstring cord, your ribbon, through the bodkin. The bodkin has a locking mechanism or some way to keep the material that's in the eye fixed and closed so that you can pull it through. Hey friends, hey, I know you're enjoying the audio version of Stitch Please, and thanks so much for listening. But you're missing out on all the great stuff going on behind the scenes. That's why I'm inviting you to join our Black Women Stitch Patreon. For as little as $5 a month, you can see all the video versions of the podcast. Plus, you get some amazing swatch cards. You know how much I love these swatch cards. Look, see how cool these are? You can't see them because you are not yet on the Patreon. So when you join the Patreon, you'll be able to see this, me showing you these amazing cards. We also have some great perks at the other tiers, like discounts, swag, office hours, and more. Don't be the last sewist in the group now. Head over to patreon.com/blackwomenstitch or click the link in the show notes and become a Patreon supporter today. We truly cannot do this without you. So thank you so much. I will tell you also, honestly, a bad bodkin is worse than a safety pin. I personally, Lisa, I consider using a safety pin to thread a drawstring or elastic to be hazing. That is hazing. You do that so that people learn to hate sewing because it is so freaking tedious. Free yourselves, friends. Get a bodkin. Now, there's lots of different kinds. I've seen some bodkins at the fabric store. I've even seen them at the Daiso. And they have a 2-pack of bodkins that have the traditional kind with the tiny small teeth. And then the type that is a loop. And then you pull down this rubber cap and it keeps the ribbon or elastic locked into that tight string. The one I'm most interested in, and this is the one that I've recently purchased, is a new one by Clover, and it's called the Clip and Glide Bodkin. I saw this demonstrated in person back in 2023, and I thought it was amazing then. But then between then and now, I haven't really thought about it again because I'm pretty satisfied with the other bodkins that I have. But I've recently ordered this one, so I can give you an update on the Patreon to let you know how this bodkin turned out for me. So that is my advice for the secondary tip, the intermediate tip. Get a bodkin. Again, also noting that in the US, it is very easy to find bodkins. They are where you can find needle and thread, etc. I've been told that these things are not very easy to find in other parts of the world. there was a great suggestion in the comments on how you could make a bodkin just using a piece of cardboard or a piece of paper and then cutting a small gap in the bottom, threading your elastic or whatever through that and like either pinning it or somehow folding it so it doesn't come out. And it gives you the same result. The point is that working with a safety pin, especially if it's small and your material is thick, can be very frustrating. And my concern has always been if you have a gigantic pin, then you have a gigantic hole in your elastic. And so that was something I didn't want. All is to say that I have really appreciated having a bodkin and building, in a sense, a type of bodkin collection. The bodkins that I have purchased have all been about between $2 and $6 US. That's how much they've cost. I don't consider that a very large investment, especially if it's going to save me frustration. So the second tip is to think about using a bodkin for your elastic, drawstring, and ribbon threading. The advanced tip I have is about equipment, and that is for the advanced folks, consider getting a heat press. There are at least three types of heat presses that one might consider getting. The first one is one I think we are pretty much familiar with. It looks like an ironing board, like a travel size ironing board. It's about maybe 2.5 feet long and 12 to 14 inches across. It's a clamshell shape and it has the heating agent at the top and you close it down kind of like a clamshell. That is, I know there's different brands. I'm not going to remember who they are, but my mother had one. I think she might still have it, or maybe it's not working anymore. But this was something she really enjoyed for pressing pants and pant legs. And it was really great for that. And I think because of the shape of the nose of the thing, you could also, if you had an iron nearby, or you could manipulate your garments to have the heat element pressed down on it from that angle, and it would still press it as if it were an iron. So that is a heat press that is an option. The second one is one I think we are a little less familiar with, and it's a pretty old tool though. It goes back to the time when you could wring your laundry, like you would, you know, if you had a washboard and then you could put it through this thing called, I think they called that a mangler. And I thought the mangler was the washer, but some say that the mangler is the iron. Now it's called a rotary iron. And if you've ever watched the show about, it's a reality show about these people who work on a yacht, they have one on the boat. If you've also ever happened to walk past a hotel laundry, they often have them in there as well because they're very good for pressing lengths and widths of fabric, for pressing sheets, and for pressing the napkins. So the rotary press is another idea. I think the one that we are most familiar with might just be because of vacations or because of seeing these at different shops, but the kind you use for t-shirts. This is the kind of heat press that I use. I first got a heat press because I was interested in sublimation printing and heat transfer vinyl. I started being interested in vinyl because I had a Silhouette Cameo and I enjoyed doing that and taking the adhesive vinyl and then the fusible vinyl or the heat activated vinyl. It's fun for t-shirts and lots of different forms of personalization. And then I fell in love with sublimation and that became something I was using it for. I think I might have had it a few years, or maybe I had it for a year before I realized that it would be great for interfacing. And I make this recommendation to get a heat press with the understanding that it can be an expensive tool if you're only doing it for one thing. If you think that you'll only use the heat press for interfacing, then maybe this is not the investment for you. But if you, for example, are a bag maker and you have to press interfacing on all of these different parts of the bag, a heat press, especially like the one that I have got this Max Pro 13 by 19 press. You will love this. It just makes that process, that fusing process, which is so necessary for bag making, it makes it so much easier. I believe that even if I wasn't using it in the beginning for the heat transfer vinyl and then for sublimation and now sometimes for direct to fabric transfer, even if I wasn't using it for that, I would still think it was really beneficial for sewing. I'm just acknowledging that because I've had it for a while and have used it for other crafts, the value of it is already built in for me. At the same time, I do believe it is one of those tools that one might wish they had earlier. And so that's why, even though it's an advanced recommendation, it is something that many sewists could use and incorporate into their sewing to make that much more fun and easy for them. I'll include the link to Heat Press Nation, and I think I can include a link to my particular presses. I've had two from them. I've had a 15 by 15 that I grew out of, and now I have the 13 by 19. So, and I really enjoy working with Heat Press Nation. I'm part of their affiliate program, so the podcast gets a donation, you know, from the sale. But I do enjoy working with them. Okay, so that's it for today, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to the Lessons from the Sewist series. Today, we talked about recommendations for beginners, intermediate, and advanced. I recommend the pill bottle for beginners. I recommend bodkin for the intermediate. And I recommend a heat press, which is a huge jump from a $5 bodkin. I'm totally recognizing that now. I recommend a heat press for the advanced. I still recommend a heat press. Recommending a heat press for the advanced is a little challenging because if you're advanced, you've already been doing it so long in the way that you already like. So this is not mandatory. That's why these are recommendations or invitations for things for you to think about. But I do hope that everyone has some happy stitches and that you'll come back next week and listen to the Stitch Please podcast. Stitchers, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for listening to this episode. Thank you for watching the social media. Thank you for liking and sharing and all that great stuff. Thank you, and we'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Stitch Please, the official podcast of Black Women Stitch, the sewing group where Black Lives Matter. We appreciate you joining us this week and every week for stories that center Black women, girls, and femmes in sewing. We invite you to join the Black Women Stitch Patreon community with giving levels beginning at $5 a month. Your contributions help us bring the Stitch Please podcast to you every week. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your support. And come back next week and we'll help you get your stitch together.